It was kind of interesting on the start line. I was like, okay, you know what? Today might be the last one. So I was content that no matter what happened today, I was either going to move on or make it to the Olympics.
Welcome to the Shakeout Podcast. I'm your host, Kate Van Buskirk. Last weekend, the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon celebrated its 30th running. This race also doubled as the Canadian Olympic Marathon Trials. Canada hasn't had a marathon trials since 1984. But this year, athletes had the chance to compete head-to-head for a spot on the Tokyo 2020 start line. Two of those athletes were surprise Canadian champions Dana Pitoretsky and Trevor Hofbauer. Today, we bring you interviews with these newly named Olympians who tell us about the impact of their breakthrough performances. But first, Maddie Kelly and I break down all the excitement from the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon, plus a historic result at Big's Backyard Ultra. This is last week's rundown. Maddie, is your head back on straight after the weekend that was the 30th anniversary of the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon?
Hardly. I try every day to get my head back on straight, but I'm still in the process.
Four days later.
Because it was that exciting.
It was that exciting. That, as far as I know, is the most thrilling overall SCWM in recent history.
I couldn't believe it. When I was watching it, and again, no shade to anyone, but when I was watching Trevor with the lead group, I thought, ambitious, but possible. I'm a little bit less familiar with Dana's story, but when I watched Dana's first half, I thought that she'd lost her marbles.
I'm pretty sure everyone thought that. In fact, watching the live stream, the commentators thought that. Watching social media feeds, people were like, what?
It was sort of like the Koskai world record.
Like, a little bit. Good, yeah. Good comparison.
Like, people saw that through the first half and they're like, oh, she's lost her, she's lost her mind.
Right.
She's lost her damn mind. And then she ran a shocking, exciting, phenomenal, historic race. And Dana, obviously, it wasn't a world record, but for her, I think that that was, like she said, a breakthrough that she had been anticipating for years.
Yeah, both Trevor and Dana, their results were actually shockingly similar. So former PB's 2:16:48 on Trevor's side runs 2:09:51. So almost exactly 7 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And Dana comes in with a 2:36:08, runs 2:29:03. Again, almost exactly 7 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Which is absolutely insane.
Both athletes unsponsored.
Yep.
Both athletes not receiving carding.
Yep.
Or funding.
Yep. Both athletes would not have made the start line at most elite major marathons.
Both athletes have never made an Olympic team.
Right.
It's actually very eerily similar storylines, but very interesting.
Right.
And also, like, a real nod to anyone who's feels like an underdog.
Well, on that note, stay tuned, listeners, because in about 20 minutes, you are going to hear Trevor and Dana interviewed on this show. I was able to catch up with them about 5 hours after they finished their races. And so you'll hear them talk more about that. They were great interviews.
I'm so excited.
About their journeys.
I'm so excited. I mean, I'm on the show and I'm saying,
well, you better be if you're not.
That's a great point.
But I think that they've both been on the scene for so long. Like, Dana has won multiple Around the Bays. They've both been on the scene sort of like, I use the word locally loosely because local to Canada, it's kind of shocking to think about how long they've both been running at the elite level.
Mm-hmm.
And Maddie, this is almost kind of like you. I mean, I was really thinking about that comparison when you won nationals this year, how a lot of people, and I don't think it was meant to be disrespectful, but a lot of people who really weren't in the know or don't know you personally were like, who is this
person who we've never really heard of.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who's come through and beaten some of the best runners that Canada's ever seen in this event. Mm-hmm. But again, if you know you know that this was, yeah, it was a breakthrough, but it wasn't completely unprecedented. And I think that was true for both Trevor and Dana as well.
And the truth is, it never is.
Right.
But
most people don't see that.
But most people don't see that. And I think there are people who, you know, sort of like speak loudly in the sport, and there are people who keep it pretty quiet.
Right.
And neither way is right or wrong. But if you're someone who prefers to keep it quiet, which I believe Trevor and Dana both are, then it just means that people are less aware of exactly what's going on with you.
I think that is very astute. I just want to read this because I loved it. On October 21st, which was Monday, 24 hours after his marathon, Trevor posted on Twitter, "There's a guy that lives in Calgary, trains solo except on long run Sundays with the guys, trains based off of feel, isn't dictated by numbers, doesn't care about likes and follows, and he's a 209 guy. Keep showing up." And it gave me goosebumps.
Yeah.
It's great.
And I think also Trevor's story, I really like it because he's been so true to himself through this entire thing.
Yes.
He tried the big training group. He tried the Athletics Canada training hubs. Mm-hmm. You know, he tried to do it the way that is mapped out by our sporting organization, and it didn't work for him.
Right.
It works extremely well for lots of people, but it wasn't working for Trevor. So he changed it. Mm-hmm. And I think it takes real confidence and courage to trust your gut, and it really paid off for him mm-hmm. on Sunday.
That's a great point. Yeah. And it's true. We saw that, not that she ever sort of left it, but on paper, Melissa Bishop should never have become the athlete she became under Dennis. And no disrespect to Dennis Farrell. He's a Mm-mm. phenomenal coach. But at the time, it was sort of, you either go train with one of these hubs that, you know, the powers that be thought were superior, or you don't sort of get the support that you really need. And it shows that you can do a lot off of just the thing that works for you.
And the thing that keeps you happy.
Yes. Yes, we've talked about that before. And Maddie Kelly once said that a happy runner is a successful runner, and we are seeing that in spades. So Trevor and Dana, your Canadian champions, both under the Olympic qualifying standard for Tokyo 2020, both with enormous PBs, they're going to the games. I mean, imagine being this far out and knowing that you've punched your ticket, so long as you stay healthy. It's what a relief.
It's so exciting for them. And I just think it's exciting for a lot of people. You know, runners and other Olympic hopefuls, just to, you know, have the first of our team effectively named.
Right.
And it's crazy to think, because World Championships just ended, but it's an Olympic year.
Right.
We're in it.
Yeah. And what a great way to thrust us into that.
And what a great way.
Fabulous. Very exciting follow-up stories. Emily Setlack and Tristan Woodfine coming second in each of their respective sex categories. Sort of surprise silver medalists. Big breakthroughs for both of them.
Big breakthroughs.
You could sort of see them coming, these breakthroughs, but again, you got to put it together on the day.
But also, like, even so for Emily, like a 2:29, like for both of them, frankly, for Emily and Tristan, these are times that they ran that would have garnered huge attention just 2 years ago.
Right.
Enormous. This is, you know, like we're talking like pre-Rachel Cliff and Cam.
Yeah.
These times would have had people's jaws on the floor of like, Canadians are running so fast. And these times don't even get them a win anymore. And that's awesome. We're becoming increasingly more competitive on the international scene. Because like the women's world record is now 2:14. So
right, that happens.
We have to keep rising to the occasion. Otherwise, we're going to be kind of forgotten on the world scene. And it's cool to see that multiple runners are able to do this.
And it's sort of, I mean, I know that this has become a bit of a tired saying, but it's true that, you know, the rising tide lifts all boats. Mm-hmm. So the fact that we went 28 years on the women's side and 43 years on the men's side without a national record, both get broken, mind you, the women's, you know, a few years ago now, mm-hmm. but not that long ago. And then again, another national record. So we've had national records on both the men's and women's side in the last year. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden we have another sub 2:10 on the men's side. Trevor ran the second fastest time ever by a Canadian.
Yeah.
Again, other than Cam, he would have been the fastest in 43 years. Mm-hmm. And same with Dana. I mean, just that power of belief, right? Like that, seeing other people doing it and being like, oh, well, it's no longer an impossible barrier. And Emily jumping on that as well is super exciting. I got to say one quick thing about Tristan, because he came into 2019 with a 218 personal best.
Yeah, he's made an enormous leap in a very short amount of time.
Ran 215 in Houston and then ran 213.16 on Sunday.
Yeah.
And really cool to see him chipping away. I was able to interview him for the broadcast right after. And I asked him, you know, is Olympic standard on your mind? And he said, absolutely.
Well, as it should be. He's not that far away at all. He's totally within striking distance.
Minute 45, which is a lot, but with the way he's been chipping away at things, big chunks.
And you know what? Speaking of those Olympic standards, they came out, everyone lost their minds, but guess what? We're getting it done. And I think that is so cool because, again, we've said it a million times, but when even like I saw the 800 meter standard, I saw the time of 1:59. And when I saw it, I thought, well, that's too bad. I'm never going to make the Olympics. And now it doesn't seem that crazy. Mm-hmm. It just kind of seems possible after this last year. And I think that there are a lot of people who are starting to feel that way.
Yeah. And to that point, I think that it's been cool because I saw a lot of stuff on social media after these marathon performances by Canadian track athletes, you know, mid-distance athletes who are nowhere. It's almost like a different sport when you compare, road running to the track.
Completely.
Who said, now I feel like my standards are more achievable just by seeing these two people crush those standards in an event that has nothing to do with mine, which is awesome.
Yeah.
It's great. So Cam Levinson and Kinsey Middleton, of course, after we saw Melindy, unfortunately have to pull out the week leading up, Kinsey and Cam are defending champs, became, you look like you want to say something. Jump right in.
Melindy's going to come back and she's going to run that standard and we're going to send a complete team of women.
Okay. We'll come back to Cam and Kinsey though, because I want to talk about that for a second. Athletics Canada is going to have one heck of a time naming this women's team.
Because Lindsay Tessier's got standard because of her finish at Worlds.
Yep.
Rachel Cliff has standard because she's the national record holder.
Dana's automatically named.
Dana's on the team.
Emily is 13 seconds off the standard.
I think it is completely within the realm of possibility that Melindy crushes standard.
So that would potentially, right there, that's five.
Five women with standard.
And
in the marathon.
In the marathon.
A standard that is under 230.
Yes.
A barrier that Canadian women used to just not break.
No, not even pay attention to. Because it was
sort of like science fiction.
Yeah, exactly. It is truly remarkable. And I was going to say, I don't envy anyone who has to be part of that decision-making process, but
you're
now
part
that I'm
of
on the board.
You're part of it.
As much as I am permitted to, I will keep you posted about the progression of this because it's going to be really challenging.
It's going to be really challenging. There's so many. The women's 400 is going to be just like that.
Yeah. Women's 8 could be
the
like that.
Yeah. We can't actually.
Women's 5 could be like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I can't talk about this anymore. Neither can you. I feel stressed.
All right, all right. What day is it? It's October. Okay, all right. We're okay.
June 28th is a long way away.
Oh, jeez.
But it feels so close.
We can't help ourselves, guys. There's no track happening, but we can't not talk about track. Okay, back to the marathon. Cam and Kinsey, disappointing days.
Disappointing days?
We're just going to call it what it is.
But they both had such amazing debuts. And, you know, that sun don't shine every day.
No, for
unfortunately.
Sure.
Unfortunately.
Yep. Yeah. And of course, so much can happen on the day in a marathon. Both ended up on the podium still. I'm sure they're both disappointed, but there are still several months. And I mean, we didn't even talk about them. You know, Kinsey could very easily get that standard as well.
Absolutely.
And Cam, we know we're going to see him bounce back real quick. So, all right. We haven't even talked about the winners. We'll give them quick shout outs because that was thrilling. So not only did we have our Canadian results, our Canadian winners running under Olympic standard, we also had Philemon Rono win for the third year. He won in 2016. He won in 2017.
He's so tiny, eh?
He's so tiny and he's so
tiny.
Sweet.
He's so nice.
Baby police, they call him because he's a police officer in Kenya and baby because he's so small. Baby police had a disappointing ninth place performance last year.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think he said he got cold.
Yeah. And I think he also had a couple injuries leading up last year. Anyway, he didn't come away with a great day. He came in this year with his sights set not only on his third win, but on his own course record, which doubles as a Canadian soil record, which was 2:06.52, and he ran 2:05 flat for that win.
Scotia is legit, folks. We have people winning in 2:05 now, and our Canadian marathoners run under 2:10.
Right.
We are really legit. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise.
No, please don't. And on the women's side, Magda Masai Robertson,
wife Of Jake, yes.
Wife of Jake Robertson. So she actually came in, this was her Scotiabank debut, but she came in with a little intel because, of course, her hubby ran this race last year.
Yeah.
And had a bit of a rough day.
But he's still done it. He knows it. He knows the first half is faster than the second. He knows that things get lonely from like 30 to 37. You know, she had all, and she like said that after. She was like, he told me like basically exactly how to run it.
Good thing to have your spouse out there charting territory for you.
Yeah.
Anyway, she ran 2:22.16.
And which is also a Canadian all comers record.
By one second. And a course record. It was a truly thrilling day.
Earned her like an extra $30,000. It was a very...
I think it was 10.
Only whatever. 1 second for 10 grand.
Yeah.
It was a costly second.
Yes.
In a positive way.
Absolutely. Okay, half marathon gets a little overlooked at Scotia because there isn't any prize money. There's no big, you know, there's no like big international names that get drawn to it. But huge shout out to Ben Preisner and Brittany Moran, both who set really big PBs to win the half.
I believe Ben's the seventh fastest half ever run by a Canadian man.
Wow.
He's also my age. Like he's for the roads. He's young. He's really young.
103.08. And I believe that was a minute and a half at least personal best because he had run 105, but 103, essentially 103 flat is legit.
And Britt ran a 3 minute PB.
I know.
She was so excited. She was literally like bounding around the course because she's a coach too. So she's cheering on her athletes who are running the full. But she came up and she started shaking me. I was sitting on a stoop like a little like street gremlin. Watching the live feed while watching what's happening in front of me.
Yeah.
Like everything, there's a lot going on.
There is
anyway,
a lot.
And she just came up by me, started shaking me, and she's like, I ran a 3 minute PB. I can't believe it. I felt amazing.
So Britt told me, we're both good friends with Britt Moran, and this was very unexpected for her. She's had a really, really rough go of it with injury over the last few years and has had to sort of withdraw from a couple marathons that she wanted to do. Anyway, she said she came in with like very few expectations on herself. Mm-hmm. She thought if she could break 1:19, that would be a good day. She said that she was channeling Lindsay Tessier, and almost every picture of her on the course is of her smiling. Mm-hmm. Brittany said that she went through 10K faster than her 10K PB and then did it one more time. Yes. Yeah. Which is pretty remarkable, but
so cool.
Goes back to a happy runner is a successful runner. So guys, try smiling next race.
Okay. I'm not kidding. I was standing with Lindsay on the course and Lindsay said, Britt needs to smile. And she yelled at her to smile and then she did.
Awesome.
And yeah, anyway, there's something to it.
I love that. So Brittany ran 1:15.12, which as you said, Maddie, was a 3 minute personal best. Also, I think the bigger point of pride for Brittany would be that she did not get beaten by a banana.
She did not get beaten by a banana. She almost got beaten by a banana, but she didn't.
Why don't you tell us what we're talking about?
So for anyone who was watching the live broadcast, you would have noticed that there was a banana running with the elite Canadian women for almost the entire first half of the race. And it looked, if you had just tuned in quickly, you would have thought, oh, Kinsey Middleton hired a banana to pace her. And she didn't. This is just one fast banana, actually the fastest banana in the world.
Fastest piece of fruit in the world,
who ran his world record at the Scotiabank Marathon, finishing in 1:15.35. His name is not Banana. It is Melvin Nyero. And he's from California. He is super pumped about his world record. He is not only the owner of that world record, but he has been given a year's supply of bananas from Chiquita Banana for his efforts.
That's a fabulous prize if you're a runner.
I know.
All right, Maddie, something occurred to me.
Yes.
When thinking about this story.
Yes, Kate.
So there, I don't love this saying because I find it a little sexist. But you know when you're out on a course, well, we don't know this, but you know how men sometimes talk about the fear of getting chicked, which means beaten by a woman.
Yeah.
Okay. Uh-huh. So imagine
both
being out.
Both of our boyfriends have had to get over that fear.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Many times over. Imagine being out on the course and your biggest fear is getting
bananaed,
chiquita'd.
Okay. I wish I had seen that coming. You've really had this in the vault for a while.
Oh, I have.
Kate's like shaking. She's so happy with her execution.
Yeah. Anyway, that's my dad joke for the day, probably for the year. I don't think I need any more. But way to go, Banana Man Melvin.
A lot of people got chiquited.
A lot of people got chiquited. In fact, that was the most frequent comment on this story was, I got beaten by a banana. What am I doing with my life? Anyway, congratulations to everyone. There are age group results up on our website as well. There are all the Guinness World Record
14 successful.
14 Guinness World Records. And you know what? People have some negative things to say about the Guinness World Records.
But Who cares?
It's fun. You know what?
Hundreds of thousands of people have watched the banana video on Twitter.
Yes.
It's fun.
There's enough crap going on in this world that if some people want to dress up in funky costumes and go out and run and have fun.
That is about the most positive thing you can do with your weekend.
I agree. It was a great day. Congratulations to everyone who ran the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon. Huge kudos to Canada Running Series and Alan Brooks, as always, for their tireless efforts. It was a roaring success. Way to go.
Killer.
All right. So there was another marathon that we kind of all forgot about because there was so much excitement happening in Toronto. And this one took place in Amsterdam and was also insane.
Yeah. So Leonard Carrier placed 11th overall, running the fastest marathon debut ever by an American at 2:07:56, making him the fifth fastest American ever. And he placed 7th in the World Champs 10,000 only 2 weeks ago. And he's currently the second fastest man. Who's the fastest?
Rupp.
Currently the second fastest man heading into the U.S. Olympic trials. Hold up. You're aware that Bernard Lagat is also running the U.S. Olympic trials.
That is correct.
For the marathon. This American Olympic trials is going to be bananas.
Bananas. It's taken on such a new meaning.
That'll also be a race to see who's the fastest banana. Anyway.
Yes.
That trials is going to be insane. And American men keep rising to the occasion. We just saw in Chicago, like 12 of them run under 2:12. Anyway, things are happening, but this is an Olympic year. This is when things happen, but things are happening faster than ever before.
Yes, literally. One quick thing I will say, and again, no shade, but Vincent Kipchumba of Kenya won the Amsterdam Marathon in 2:05:09, meaning that Amsterdam was slower than Toronto. Well, at least on the men's side, because actually
on the women's side, it was way faster.
It was crazy. There were two women under 2:20. There were six women under 2:25.
Oh,
I know. Dagitu Azamara of Ethiopia won the women's race in 2:19:26 in her debut. She's only 20 years old. New course record. Unreal performance. And the cool thing about Amsterdam that I think used to happen a lot more, but they've kind of gotten away from, is that it ends on the track in a stadium. So you guys should go check out the video because it's really fun to watch. You kind of come in and you're a little blind for a second because you come into the stadium and then you have to turn immediately and run 200 meters. And it could be a little tough if you're being hotly pursued by your second place runner, which both of them were.
I love that saying, under hot pursuit.
Under hot pursuit. But it was fun to watch. And finally on the roads, the Cape to Cabot 20K took place in Newfoundland over the weekend.
One.
And it looks like a super, super challenging course.
It's a really, really challenging course, which is why it takes people like hours to complete a 20K.
Right. Huge rolling hills, but beautiful views. I mean, this is one that if you're willing to put yourself through some pain, you'd get rewarded with some gorgeous lookouts along the way.
Oh, well, it's so rugged there. It's absolutely beautiful.
So there was a new women's course record of 1:19:32 set by Jennifer Murren, and Zach Putt won the men's race for the second year in a row with a PB of 1:16:46. But the big story was
81-year-old Florence Barron runs at 2:14:45. She runs this race all the time. Every year, she only gets a couple seconds slower, despite the fact that she's in her 80s. She's a monster.
That's so awesome.
It's so cool. And the other little interesting nugget, Jennifer Murren, I believe, was second overall.
Ah, yes.
Which brings us to our next story about women dominating. I know this isn't an ultra distance, but if you're looking at the time, it's like more in that range just because it's such a difficult course.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And I don't actually, do you know if those two are from Newfoundland?
I'm not sure about that.
Okay, well, I'm not sure either, but my bet, if I were a betting woman, I would say yes, because those Newfies are tough as nails.
And they know that course.
Yeah. Correct.
So
yes,
this is a nice segue into women kicking butt over really long distances, because Big's Backyard Ultra, which is Laz's race, had a female winner.
For the first time ever, right?
Yes.
For the first time ever. Maggie Gutterl. So, all right, we got to talk about what this race is, because it's kind of insane.
It's a last man standing race. It's bonkers.
So, yeah. And in most races, there's a very clear finish line, which psychologically, as humans, we like knowing where the start and the finish of things are. That helps us a lot. Mm-hmm. When there is no finish and it's basically just go until you physically can't go any longer at the same pace, it sounds like a form of torture.
To depth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it is. So this is, as you mentioned, it's Laz Lake, the creator of the famous Barkley Marathons race. It's named after his dog, Big, hence Big's Backyard. Mm-hmm. And it's a 4.1 mile loop. So a 6.4K loop. And you have 1 hour to complete this loop as many times as you can do it in an hour.
Like, you must pass the checkpoint every hour.
Yes.
And you can't like crawl, basically.
No. And so it's interesting because there's a great little documentary about this. And they talk about it, where people who do it for the first time, particularly even if they're ultra runners, but they come from slightly shorter ultra backgrounds that are a little faster, they're like, this is so weird. The gun goes off and everyone's walking. Like, this doesn't, for the first loop, because you want to conserve as much energy as possible. So for the average person who trains frequently and is fairly capable, mm-hmm. 6.4K in an hour does not seem that grueling.
No.
But when you do it over and over and over again, and in Maggie's case, 60 times.
Oh, gosh.
Which equals 250 miles or 402.3 kilometers. It tends to add up.
No kidding.
So, as you mentioned, this was the first time that a woman has won. A woman has come second or third overall in the last several iterations of this race. But Maggie, you're a stud. She battled it out with Will Hayward. And apparently there's a real camaraderie that forms, because it's tough, because you know that in order for you to win, the other person has to fail. Mm-hmm. But you're running through the middle of the night. I mean, this takes place over days. So you become quite close, and you come to rely on that person that you're running with the whole time. Mm-hmm. So she was battling it out with him. He dropped during the 60th lap. She completed that 60th lap. She won with the fourth highest mileage in Big's history. Which is pretty remarkable. In fact, she beat some pretty big names, including Dave Proctor, Canadian Dave Proctor. He was third. He claimed to have the best race of his life. He completed 51 laps, 336 kilometers in 38 hours and 29 minutes.
Wow.
Outrageous.
Outrageous.
Last piece of trail news is that the 16th edition of the NACAC Mountain Running Championships took place in Mexico over the weekend, and Canada was the combined team third place overall behind the US and Mexico, and also placed third in the men's and women's teams individually. The race it's a 12K course with over 610 meters of elevation gain, all of it at 2,100 meters above sea level. So it's no joke. There were heavy storms before the race, which made it super treacherous for the footing. On our women's side, we had Kristen Finley, Carly Rumpel, and Jocelyn Poirier. And on the men's side, we had Alexandra Ricard, Gareth Hadfield, and Brendan Neely. Way to go, team.
Carly Rumpel was Liz Whalen's teammate at UNC.
I knew that name.
Yeah.
Cool. So many trackies making that transition.
I know.
It's good to see.
On to the cross country course. There was not much to report this week because everyone's gearing up for their conference championships.
Woohoo.
Which are going to be super exciting. And we will let you know what went down, because we are only 2 weeks away from the national championship.
Comes up quick.
I know.
So lastly, on our last rundown, mm-hmm. Maddie, you and I asked listeners to weigh in with their thoughts on this whole concept of, quote, shoe doping, basically how much of an advantage the Nike Next Percent shoes actually provide, whether they should be allowed. And it wasn't even the Next Percents. It was the...
Oh, the Alpha Fly?
So not even the Next Percent necessarily, but the Alpha Fly, which is not even available.
Do you think the Pacers wore the Beta Fly?
And there's Maddie's dad joke of the week. Anyway, we asked you guys to weigh in. We had one listener reach out to us on Instagram. Her Insta handle is VAA. I'm sorry if I'm not saying that correctly, but I'm going to give her a little airtime here because she took the time to call right in after we asked people to do so.
You almost said call in. I got in your head.
I did. You did. So she says, we can't only take the shoes into consideration when it comes to this event. The entire thing was manufactured, from the shoes to the technology used en route to the position of the pacers to the fueling, everything. Even the weather was manufactured in a way. They ran on a day that had optimal conditions. So while the shoes may have helped, the whole event itself was really set up and somewhat artificially manufactured to ensure success. That's not to say it wasn't a remarkable accomplishment, because it absolutely was, but big picture, it's not just about the shoes. And then she goes on to say, hopefully this gets read and I'm loving the content. So V, thank you so much for reaching out to us. That's sort of a middle of the road approach to this. And it seems from all that we've gathered that the response to Kipchoge's performance, people either are all about the shoes, they think the shoes should be banned, or they sit somewhere in the middle like V does by saying, you know what, if you're going to have a manufactured event, why not have shoes that are part of that sort of manufactured attempt? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I agree with you, V. Good point. Thanks for writing in. Listeners, please keep reaching out to us on Twitter, on Instagram. We are at Shakeout Podcast. We are at Canadian Running. Reach out to us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Keep those thoughts coming. So stay tuned, because right after this are the exclusive interviews with Dana Pitaretsky and Trevor Hofbauer, your Canadian champions and Olympic qualifiers in the marathon. And they're great.
For the week of October 21st,
I'm Kate.
I'm Maddie.
And we will chat with you again soon. Trevor Hofbauer and Dana Pitaretsky came into last week's race as dark horses. Both have enjoyed success on the roads in the past, but their personal bests and recent results had them pegged as unlikely victors. Never mind ready to run under the incredibly demanding Olympic standards of 2:11:30 and 2:29:30, respectively. Dana and Trevor had remarkably similar storylines at this year's STWM. Neither were favorites for the win, and they each ran nearly 7-minute PBs to take the Canadian title and hit their qualifying marks. Both made big moves in the last 18 months, changing their training locations, coaches, and lifestyle. And both came into this race as a last-ditch attempt to prove to themselves and the nation that they belong on the world stage. I sat down with Trevor and Dana following their monumental wins. All right, Dana, it's been, what, 5 hours since you finished? How are you feeling?
I feel great. I feel like I would like to shower eventually.
That's very fair. You came in today with a 2:36:08 personal best from Ottawa 2017. You've run so many different distances. You race a lot. The around the bay, you've won many times. You've placed on the podium several times. You have, you know, established yourself on the elite racing scene many times over. But it always feels like you've been just outside of the top group and just outside of the conversation around our very top elites. And today you cemented yourself beyond a doubt at the top of that pack. What has changed over the last year or so that has made such a huge difference for you in being able to lower your personal best by over 6 minutes?
I don't think anything changed. I feel like I've had this race in me for years. This build wasn't any different than others. Of course, each build we try to increase the, you know, the mileage that I'm running overall slightly, maybe do some longer tempos than I've done before, or like marathon pace segments, like a little bit more each time. But actually this build was a little bit rocky at the start. I had what I think was just like some iron issues in the summer. And thankfully, I finally figured out what it was and was able to remedy that probably just in time. But I guess besides just continuing training like we've been in the past, I think mentally I felt strong and had more confidence in my second half of the race. I just felt like, I mean, I went out fast, so that actually wasn't the plan at all. But my goal was to run with the group and then be confident and feel strong in the second half, which I believed that I could do because my training has indicated that. But yeah, I mean, little positive split there, but I got it done. So that's all that matters.
So to that point, you did go out very aggressively. And so all of us watching the live stream, I think there was a little bit of skepticism around what you were doing and what you were capable of. And at the same time, you're a very experienced runner. So it's not like this was a debut or you trying to figure out the distance. You've run this race many, many times. At one point, though, I think probably at about 15K, you were on pace for a 225, and you held that for quite a while, and you looked great. And so, you know, the conversation was, is this intentional? Is this just her, you know, being a little bit risky? You said that that wasn't the plan. Did you go into this race saying that you were just going to kind of run by feel and see what that brought you?
The goal was to run with, we had a bunch of girls who were hoping to go through half in 114. And I just felt like, I don't know, the first couple K, I felt like this wasn't, like we were going too slow. So I didn't really increase because of that, but I saw the other two pacers who Alan had for us and just ran behind them. And then I guess there was some separation. And I know that 5K, I think, was 17:20 something, which was a little bit quick, but it is quite downhill in that first 5K. So I just thought, oh, I feel like I've actually gone through 5K really similarly the last time I did Toronto. Then I saw my 10K split, and that was, I think, 34 flat, which was not the plan. And I didn't know that we were going that fast because I was sort of looking at my GPS and I thought it was inaccurate. I think it was like 3:15s. I mean, it's hard to rely on your GPS. I was just sort of settling in. I was behind the pacer and I thought maybe the group wasn't actually going at 114. They were right on. I was just a lot further ahead. But at that point, what can you do? I just had to press on and just like, I felt great. I felt relaxed. I knew that the second half was going to be a little bit slower just because of the course. And I just kept the door open for something special to happen today because I didn't want to hamper that in any way.
Those of us watching saw your half split, which was 1:12 and change. And you have run slower than that as a result for an actual half marathon in the last couple of halves that you've run. Is there anything to be said for that concept of just knowing how fit you are? You said you left the door open for something special to happen and then trusting that flow to come out of your body. Is that something that is sort of a new concept for you? Have you been more formulaic in the past? And was this sort of a departure from that in that you just allowed yourself to leave that door open for whatever possibility could befall you?
I think in marathons in the past, I've wanted to run a certain pace and it's definitely felt a lot harder than it did today. So I was thinking and comparing in my mind about how I felt in the first half of other marathons, and this was just a special day. And I mean, of course, I've run slower halves even very recently, but it's different when you have that one race, that one goal, you're building towards it. And I think for, you know, recent halves in the past, it hasn't been the main goal. So I had to also consider that.
So you came in today again with a personal best that was significantly slower than what you ended up ultimately running, which was 2:29.03. Of course, that Olympic standard is 2:29.30. Was that on your mind coming into this weekend to be the first Canadian and get that qualifying standard to land yourself a spot on the start line in Tokyo 2020?
That was the hope, but did I think it was going to happen? Yeah, I didn't know. Even in the last 7K, I kept thinking this standard is maybe slipping away. I didn't even know if I was going to make it to the finish line because I was definitely losing momentum. But I also thought, just keep going, because even if you run under the Olympic time standard, that my time would probably still rank me and maybe that would still secure a spot. But yeah, I mean, the goal was always to do both. Of course, I wanted to put myself in the best position possible to be selected. But yeah, it's crazy that that actually happened.
So over the last several years, you've had a lot of success at different distances, but you've also been plagued by injury that has pretty significantly impacted your consistency in the sport. What did it feel like being able to be healthy enough to put in a good build and get to the start line today? Never mind what the outcome was, but just the importance of being able to get here feeling healthy and ready to go.
Yeah, that's the hardest part, is just getting to the start line healthy physically and mentally to be able to put it all out there on the day. And then even if you do that, sometimes the weather isn't in your favor. I've been actually really fortunate to stay healthy and not really have any injuries at all since I guess the last time I did Toronto in 2017. That was my last major injury. And I just have built this amazing team around me who is so supportive. And my massage therapist, Kimmen Peterson, actually came to Toronto and was taking a million pics out there. He's been, of course, helping to keep me healthy and seeing physios all the time. It's at this level, I think it's just, it takes a village for anybody. It really takes a village. And yeah, it's great to be healthy and fast on the day.
So this was something that I addressed with a lot of our elites that actually at the press conference, that you all have international experience. You've all, you know, been representing your communities and your country abroad, but you do a lot of Canadian racing. What did it mean to you to race an event of this caliber and have this kind of performance on home soil today?
Well, it probably will never happen again. But yeah, it's easy to race these Canadian races because Alan just, he does it all, and he makes you want to come to his races and is so supportive for Canadian athletics. So to put together this type of situation where it was an Olympic trials and for me to have the day that I had is, I don't know how anything in my future in this sport is going to surpass today.
So Canadian women's marathoners are having a moment right now. For a long time, we didn't see anyone kind of getting close to that 230 barrier. And seemingly sort of all of a sudden, I think we need to give a lot of credit to Krista and Lanny for the work that they did in breaking down that barrier a few years ago. But it seems like sort of suddenly we've got this incredible influx of women in Canada running fantastic times. You and Emily both broke that 230 barrier for the first time today. How does it feel to be a part of this really exciting moment in Canadian women's marathoning?
Yeah, it's exciting and it's also scary because without this top Canadian spot, honestly, I don't know if this time would be good enough to get me to the Olympics. So it's amazing. And I think that most of all, it just is really pushing each and every one of us to strive for more because we see each other doing it. So yeah, I mean, Lindsay Tessier, I just have to mention her because she has really helped me mentally. We were communicating a couple of months back and I was really struggling mentally, just thinking that like nothing was going to come together. And she was just like, just fake it till you make it. That's what I did in Doha. And look how that turned out for her. Ninth in the world. So yeah, we just support each other and push each other to do better. And it's a great time to be a runner in Canada.
So Trevor Hofbauer, it's been about 5 hours since you completed your blazing 209.51 at the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon. I know you've only had a few hours to reflect, but can you give us your Coles Notes version of your thoughts in the last 5 hours?
Yeah, it went very, very well. I came down here with the mindset that there was an opportunity out there to make the Olympic team. And that's been my goal for the last like 5 to 7 years. And that's all I wanted to do. So to do that, I'm very happy with it. And I couldn't have asked for a better day, a better opportunity. And I think all the pieces just came together at once.
So you came into this race having set a fairly recent personal best in Hamburg of 2:16:48. Of course, you won this race 2 years ago in 2:18 and change. 2:09 is the second fastest time ever run by a Canadian, of course, outside of Cam Levin's national record last year. You said you came in with the hope of running that Olympic standard. Did you think that a sub 2:10 was in the cards?
I just didn't think about it. I didn't know what I could do on this day, to be honest. I just felt really good going through 5K and 10K, and it started to feel a little bit fast at like 21 kilometers, but I just wanted to stay on the gas. And at no point did I think like 2:10 was possible or 2:09 or 2:08. But I knew that like if all the cards were in my favor, that I could do something really special. And coming around the bend, that's when I saw 2:09, and it just like it struck me that it was the second fastest time ever. So that is really cool. And yeah, I'm just happy with it.
I had the great pleasure of being able to interview you right after the race, and you were very visibly emotional, understandably so. Where did that emotion come from? Was it the time? Was it the Olympic standard? Was it the huge breakthrough? Like what was sort of going through your mind right after you finished?
Yeah, it was Olympic standard. My family knows how much I've given to this sport over the years, and we have a family reunion that we do every year in August in Michigan. So that's where, like, my cousin, she came up here today from Michigan to watch this race, and she knows what I do in August. And just to do something very special today, for her to see that, that was like the coolest thing that I could give to her, was just that experience. So it was like, it was doing the Olympic standard and with my family knowing that's my goal and having them here today witnessing that I just did that. That's where all that emotion came from.
So you were training with Speed River for a while. And then I believe it was last year you made the move back to Calgary to change training groups and change up part of your lifestyle for the sport. What has been, do you think, the biggest factor in the last year or two that has led to this breakthrough, whether that be training or lifestyle or approach to the sport?
There's a bit of lifestyle and approach to the sport. I really lost the foundational pieces that made me who I was when I was out in Guelph. And Guelph, I made a decision to go there, and I don't regret it. I really enjoyed my time there, but I just lost a piece of who I was, and that was my family and my friends. So to go back, to get back involved with that, that was big. And just to live under that Calgary bubble again, just to enjoy the mountains, the fresh air, and just to live like more of a relaxed lifestyle, it was a huge change there. And just to get that self-belief back that I could have another breakthrough, it was all about the mindset as well.
Were there any specific changes that you made to your training, whether it be mileage or workouts, you know, that you think contributed to this as well?
I didn't make a lot of changes, and I can be transparent about that. When I was in Guelph doing my first marathon build, we got in some longer tempos of like 70 minutes and some longer fartleks and stuff like that. And then when I went back to Calgary, I took some of that, what I had learned from Dave, I took that back to Calgary with me and incorporated it into what I've done in the past as well. And that worked well for Hamburg. I was sick too often leading up to Hamburg, so I didn't have that breakthrough like I wanted to. And then this one went really, really well. This summer in Calgary was perfect, where we didn't have a lot of forest fires in the British Columbia area. So thankfully, we had some really good conditions, and I had a really consistent training block. And I was able to get my tempo up to about 80 minutes. And yeah, just consistency throughout the last 3 years, from marathon one to marathon three. I think it's just like a cumulative build of strength over time.
So you and I were chatting earlier about your current financial situation. And of course, I think one of the things that's important for our listeners to understand, because most of them are recreational athletes who are doing this for the love of the sport, they see a lot of elites as being, there's this connotation that comes with being a professional athlete that insinuates that we're making a lot of money and that this is something that we have devoted our lives to because we can make a living at it. And yet that is not the case for the majority of us. You came into this race technically unsponsored. You are not carded at the moment, meaning you're not receiving government funding. And you very candidly told me earlier that if things didn't work out today, this might be your last race and you might have to give this up to get a real job. The interesting thing is Dana is in a very similar situation. She is unsponsored, uncarded, and is under a lot of pressure to sort of move on. What has been your driving force in allowing you to continue pursuing something that has absolutely no guarantee of panning out?
I'm a very stubborn individual. If I start something, I'm going to finish it. And I made the commitment a few years back to give this a go. So with the savings that I had in place and with the money that I've earned over the years, I was able to put that aside and commit it to this moment. But time has gone by and I haven't been able to really earn more than I'm spending. So I'm getting to a point now where, yeah, if today didn't go well and if I wasn't able to get a little bit more money in my pocket, then very likely it was going to be my last race. It was kind of interesting on the start line. I was in a very content position. I was relaxed. I was like, okay, you know what? Today might be the last one. Like, I'm content. I've given so much to this sport, and I feel like I've given a lot back to my community as well. So I was content that no matter what happened today, I was either going to move on or make it to the Olympics. And it worked out in my favor that I can continue this for another year, hopefully. But yeah, that was kind of like the driving force. It's just, I want to do what I've committed myself to do. And I'm going to get to that point no matter what.
So you won this race in 2017, which was your debut of the marathon at the time. And one of the, I think, most exciting elements of that race was how demonstrative you were with your excitement in the last kilometer, basically leading into that finish line. I know that this is probably a hard thing to do, but are you able to sort of compare or talk about how that win felt compared to today?
Yeah, two completely different events, but at the same time, same city. In 2017, it was like my introduction to that race. And I wanted to have a really positive experience. And there's a little bit of a more, there's a more motivating force behind me than I've actually ever expressed. And I'm not going to do that today. Okay. That's like, that's for the very, very end of my career. So that was a very emotional day because I felt like a bigger connection to my ultimate motivating force. And that's kind of what I've expressed at the finish line on that day. And it was very powerful. And I don't regret it one bit, but I did get a couple people saying, hey, no high fives this time. Or I think even at like kilometer 41, there was somebody on the sidelines that was yelling out, don't give high fives at the finish line, sprint it in. I'm like, okay, whatever. You know what? I'm going to give my all. And today was all about trying to make that team. So it was like two completely different experiences. One, just trying to be a good, positive experience and try and like motivate the next crop of athletes to be in a position that I was at that moment and to say like, hey, if you really put some time into the sport, you can have cool moments like this. And then this race was all about pure performance, try and get to that goal that you've been shooting for the last like 5 to 7 years, and good things will happen. So two different focuses.
So you definitely seemed a little more like keyed in the last 500 meters, let's say today. But I did notice, you know, watching the live stream, there were a few points in the race, especially on some of those switchbacks, where you were high-fiving other friends of yours on the course and just offering it. And it wasn't, again, quite to the same degree, but offering that sort of support to your fellow runners who are also your competitors. What does that community or communal element of running mean to you? Like, how does that play into your experience on the day, knowing that there's this really kind of tight brotherhood of other guys out there doing what you're doing under very similar circumstances?
Yeah, it's kind of a cool little community that we have. Like Evan Esselink and I, we're very, very close. I would consider him like a brother to me. So when I saw him out there, I really wanted to encourage him, being his first marathon, and same with Rory Linkletter. And Dylan Weiss was out there too, and I give him a pretty strong high five. And everybody knows how fast he's running. Like with his mile to marathon program, he's been giving back to the community so much. So I really wanted to acknowledge them on the race course and try and encourage them on, because it is a long event. And if you are going through halfway or like 30K, maybe you're not feeling it as much. So because it's such a long event and it's such a slow burn, you can have a little bit more fun with it in the middle of the race. Whereas like a track race where it's like all out sprint, like, yeah, even like 3000, you don't see that on track events, but the marathon is like so much bigger than that. So I really wanted to encourage on Rory and Evan being first timers out there and make sure that they had a good positive experience, because they will be a part of that next group, and having that first positive experience means a lot.
So last question, I asked Dana this as well, but there are, you know, maybe a little bit more so with her because she's been in the sport for so long. I know you've been in it for a long time as well, but both of you had massive, massive breakthroughs today in terms of your time. And so just in general, there's, you know, the majority of our listeners are people who come out and train and want to get the most out of themselves, but they're not going to get to the level you're at, but they still look to you for sources of inspiration. Do you have any words of advice or encouragement or suggestions for, you know, let's say the average recreational runner who has a family, has a full-time job, is investing themselves into the sport just for the love of it, but might feel a little bit stuck or a little bit stale? Again, today was such a groundbreaking experience for you. What words would you leave them with?
Keep the sport as your passion. It's really easy to get ahead of yourself and to lose that passion, because if you are continuing to focus on certain goals that you may be achieving or may not be achieving, in a way you do lose a little bit of passion over time, because continuing to hit those goals, it can wear on you mentally. So just remember to be out there for the right reasons. Remember why you're doing it, and keep that always at the back of your mind that it is a passion more than like a pure performance sport. And even though you highlight like myself and Dana kind of breaking through, we all experience the same pain and suffering on the same race day. And I think that's something very unique, no matter what distance you're doing, whether it be like marathon or like 3000 meter, like all your competitors are experiencing the same kind of feel. And that's pretty unique to have. Also, the training is very similar with other athletes. So we all go through the same things. There's just different paces, and it's not a matter of like being faster or slower than somebody else. And I know people walk up to me and they're like, oh, I know I'll never be at the level you're at, but you don't have to say that, because we all go through the same things. And that's something so unique and something very rewarding amongst all of us that gets overlooked.
I think like finding joy in just the little steps, and that big breakthrough will eventually come, but sometimes it takes longer than you want it to. And I think patience is just so important, because so many things have to line up on the day, but when they do, it's that much better if you've been waiting a long time.
Thank you to Trevor and Dana for sharing with us this week. Follow them on their road to Tokyo by visiting their websites, trevorhoffbauer.com and danapitaretsky.com. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Shakeout Podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to our show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll talk again soon.